So I'm delighted to be here for 2 weeks. We get to play together for 2 weeks. And so I was, you know, asking what to talk about. And a poem that came to me, and you're probably familiar with this, but it was Ralph Waldo Emerson who said, "What lies behind us and what lies before us are tiny matters compared to what lies within us." Pointing us to something within. Now, I grew up Pentecostal. I'm originally from North Carolina. I've lived all over the United States and served ministries in different places. But the first time I heard about the presence of God being within you, I had this visual of like one chocolate chip hidden in a cookie. And that there was a spark of divinity somewhere. And if I could ever excavate it and find it. But what I've come to understand is that when we say that there's something within you, the kingdom of God, the treasure, there's something within you, what we're talking about is it's within your nature. It's within the reality of your being. And it is something that we do awaken to. Something that perhaps you could go much of your life and never even realize it. And so this week and next week, we're going to be looking at five steps, five movements, aspects of our being that you can begin to work with in your own life, in your spiritual journey, and on your life. Now, the parable that this is based on is actually found in the Gospel of Matthew for reference, if you care to reference, and it's Matthew 13 and 44. And this little short parable goes like this. It says, "The kingdom of heaven is like a treasure hidden in a field, which an individual found and then hid again. And then with their joy, they went and sold all that they had in order to buy that field, the field with the treasure in it." It's talking about a movement of our being. And there's five steps in this we'll look at. But first, I like to look at different spiritual traditions that are pointing to the same universal truths. If you look at the Buddhist tradition, there's a very, very similar story. In the Buddhist tradition, it says there's a story of a very poor man who lived in a mud hut, and he was told that there was a treasure chest just below the floor of his hut. And so the question became, would he do whatever was necessary to remove the dirt, to remove the clay, to discover the hidden treasure? The Buddha went on to say, "Each person possesses a precious inner treasure of infinite worth. To remain unaware of this and stumble about in spiritual poverty is a tragic waste." Again, they're speaking about the same thing. And then there's that beautiful poet, Rumi. Rumi said it this way, "There's one thing in this world you must never forget to do. If you forget anything and everything else but not this, then there's nothing to worry about. But if you remember everything else and forget this, then you will have done nothing in your life." And he goes on to say, the one thing is to remember the deep root of your being and to give yourself to that. And so this parable about a discovery that is made and a movement from being in a place that is not aware of this hidden treasure to literally living in a field with the treasure in it. So the five things that we can pull from this, number one is that there is a process in the activity of discovery. There's something that requires discovery. Number two is a process of release. The story says they sold everything. What that means metaphysically is getting rid of everything, disentangling. You know, we sometimes think we are our conditions. We think we are our labels and our roles and are all these things. And it's about letting go and getting rid of that. So again, it's the process of discovery, the process of release and letting go. The third one then is the process of raising the currency, or what we would say, raising the consciousness, raising the awareness, the process of raising the consciousness so that one can, number four, begin to identify, take ownership. In Unity, we call it the I Am presence, the Christ presence. Begin to live as a new creature. And then number five is to literally live in a field with a treasure in it. That's to live an enriched state of being, an enlightened state of being. That's the fifth one we're going to look at. So would it be fun for you to go through those five? I hope so, because that's what I have planned. So the first one, the discovery. There's something hidden. And you know, this is not the only parable. There's, whatever spiritual path, if you look in the Bible, if you look in the Jewish, if you look in many different traditions, there's stories of having to find something, to discover it. There was the story of the lost sheep. You know, there's the lost son. There's the virgin with 10 coins, and yet there's one missing. There's something missing. So we know that part of our journey in life is about discovery. And what we're really discovering, it all comes down to self-discovery. It's about coming to know who we are beyond the surface. So the first one is to know that the activity of discovery is always taking place with you, within you. The other thing that's really important to mention about this is, even though, you know, we use words to point us to something, is not to let the word limit you. And even though we look at this through five steps, life is happening at many different levels in a holistic way. If only, have you ever done all of these things and said, "Praise God, I have finally arrived," and then you lost it again? Yeah. And you think, "I finally got it figured out," and no, I haven't. Or, "I finally got all my ducks in a row over here," and then you turn over here and all your goats are just fighting each other. It's like however you use it, you know that there's, so just know that when we're talking about these things, it's not like you completely nail number one and now you're on to number two. No. As long as you have skin on, you're always going to be complete. You're born complete. You've got Matthew Fox coming here, by the way. That's a big deal, in case you all didn't know that. That's a really big deal. He talks about original blessing. You are blessed. You are complete. You're that perfect picture on the puzzle box, and you're all those pieces in the middle, inside of it, trying to put your own self together. And so as long as you've got skin on, there's something yet more to be discovered. There's something more to bring to life. So to know that life is always asking you about discovery is, who do you know yourself to be? Who do you say that you are? There's something within you that is actively reshaping your being, and life is always asking you, when it comes to discovery, who do you know yourself to be? There's a wonderful story from the Sufi tradition. The character is called Mullah Nasruddin. You may have heard of Nasruddin. He's often described as the wise fool. Well, in this particular parable, Nasruddin shows up at the bank with a check, and it's worth a lot of money. But Nasruddin looks like he never changed clothes after Woodstock. And he just rolled up there and showed up with this big check. And he walks up to the teller and he says, "I'm Nasruddin. I want to cash this check." The teller looks at the check and looks at him and looks at the check and looks at him and says, "Well, sir, I need some identification. I need for you to identify yourself." And he just feels around. He's like, "Well, I'm Nasruddin." And she said, "Sir, you're going to have to provide something. I need you to identify yourself." He said, "Just a moment." So he goes over to the other teller line and starts talking to a woman over here. This teller is thinking, "What is he doing?" Now this woman starts digging through her purse and hands him something. He walks back over to the teller, and he says, "Yep, this is me. I'm Nasruddin." He said, "It's me now. Can you cash my check?" End of story. Well, his point is, life is always asking you, who do you say you are? Who do you know yourself to be? You may know yourself to be confident and loving in this area, but then there's dinner with the in-laws. Or the people that we all have in our life, who I lovingly refer to as sandpaper for your soul. There's, you think, I know myself to be loving. I know myself to have it together. I know myself. And then you find yourself in a situation where life is now saying, now who do you know yourself to be? How many of you have had something joyful added in your life in the last year? How many of you have had a great loss in the last year? And in the midst of those, life has asked you, who are you now? Who do you know yourself to be? I told you I'm currently the minister at Unity of the Blue Ridge in North Carolina. I've served ministries in the Seattle area, in Lawrence, Kansas, and in Maui, Hawaii. While I was in Maui, as soon as I moved to Maui to serve as a senior minister there at Unity, I decided I wanted to learn more about the Hawaiian culture. It's a very spiritual place, very spiritual culture. I wanted to learn enough to know how to pronounce certain things. So I signed up for a community college class on Hawaiian language and culture right after I moved there. So the first night, I get to the class. It's at the Maui Community College, and I'm the kind of student, I always sit near the front with my pencil and paper and just so excited to learn. And I did, and it was a pretty full class, about the size of this room. And then the Hawaiian teacher called a kumu. He walked in, this very big presence of a man dressed in the Hawaiian, all the tea leaves. And he came in, and without saying a word, he walked over to the chalkboard, and he wrote with chalk, kama aina. And he drew a line, and then he wrote malahini. And then he looked at us and said, everybody line up. So again, I'm close to the front. I fall in line. I'm number two in line. And without saying anything else, he just says, now write your name on the board under the appropriate heading. I'm like, what? And so the first person right in front of me was clearly to me looked Polynesian, Hawaiian. He wrote his name under Kama'aina. So I thought, well, if he's that, maybe I'm this, but that may be mean like smart, and that may mean stupid. And so I don't know what that means, what it means. So all of a sudden I felt like a little kid in school. I'm like, I'm a grown person. I'm a nervous wreck. And I walk up to that board and looked for just a moment, and I did the only honest thing I knew to do. I wrote my name on the line. Like, I don't know what I am. And the people in the class chuckled. The kumu just stood there. I thought, yeah, I probably should just go sit at the back now. That was not very good. But interestingly, by the time everybody finished, the majority, 80% of the names were right down the middle on the line. We didn't know who we were. And I'll never forget that kumu never really acknowledged that, but he said, if you never hear anything else, or never take anything else away from this class, he said, I want you to know that who you know yourself to be is the most important life lesson you will ever undergo. Who you say you are. He said, in Hawaii, kama aina means children of the land, child of the land. Kama, child, aina, land. He said, as Hawaiians, we know that each and every person here is a child of the land, a child of the great mother, a child of the one force, the one power, the one presence. He said, I know that's who you are. The question is, who do you say you are? He said, and then we have malahini. Malahini simply means stranger, outsider. At best, it means visitor. And he said, it's really important, not only on this island, but in life. He said, again, the most important question you're always being asked is, who do you know yourself to be? And I sat in that class that first night with tears streaming down my face because I thought, this is the most spiritual teaching you could ever encounter. You see, Jesus, a master teacher, constantly told people, do you know that you are heir to the kingdom? You are son and daughter to the divine. You are an original blessing. What he claimed for himself, he claimed for all and proclaimed for all humanity. His whole message was about, do you know who you are? You are the children. You are a living expression of the one power, the one presence. And so life is always asking us, who do you know yourself to be? Because who we know ourselves to be is going to determine how we show up. It will determine what we believe is possible for us. It will determine what we believe is available to us. It will determine how we reach for a purpose. Who we believe and who we know ourselves to be will shape and inform all of those things. Barbara Marciniak wrote, "Everything changes when you start to emit your own frequency, your own identity, your own name, your own, this is who I am. Everything changes when you start to emit your own frequency rather than absorbing the frequencies around you. When you start imprinting your intent on the universe rather than receiving an imprint just from the status quo or from existence. When you begin to know, nope, this is who I am. And so that there is something within you, there is something within me, call it that treasure, that is actively reshaping yourself. This discovery that we make is to know ourself as the full living expression of the one power and the one presence. That's the great discovery that we're making. There is something within me that is actively reshaping myself. When I lived on Maui, one of the other great things I had the opportunity to do was to spend time and get to know the one and only Ram Dass. He actually would attend the Unity Church from time to time and do things such as that. And the previous Unity minister, the Reverend Mary Omwake, the late Reverend Mary Omwake, was good friends with him. And so through her, I got to know Ram Dass. And I knew some about him, but not a lot. But I was in his home with Reverend Mary at one time, and he was talking about everybody goes through somebody training. And I thought, wow, that is brilliant. And he said, you know, we're all born in this world as a little somebody. You are somebody's little somebody. And they give you a little somebody name. And how many of you, I'm from the South, in case you didn't pick up on an accent. I can't really hide it, but how many of you know what hand-me-downs are? Do you have hand? Okay, so that goes all the way across the coast, okay? Okay. So I had lots of cousins and stuff, and I got hand-me-down shirts and pants and clothes and toys. But what I came to discover in life is I got a lot of hand-me-down beliefs. Ah, yeah. There's like a story of two little boys in Sunday school, and the teacher says, how many of you believe in God? And they all like, I do, I do. And then the teacher said, somebody tell me why you believe in God. And only one hand went up, and the little boy, the teacher said, why do you believe in God? And he said, well, I believe it runs in my family. So we're all making this great discovery. Who do you know yourself to be? And you've been through somebody training. This is who you are. You're somebody's daughter, somebody's son. You were planned. Oh, you were an accident. You were a kind child. Oh, you were a little critter. You are a Leo. You are a Libra. You are a teacher. You are a this or a that. We have so many ways we identify ourselves, which are all fine. But what tends to happen is we get our I am entangled with our labels. Amen. We get confused and we let our conditions inform who we are rather than our true nature establish who we are. And that's what this teaching is asking us to do, is don't ever lose sight of that. So who do you say you are? Who do you know you are? You've been through your somebody training. You've got a lot of hand-me-down beliefs. And yet, there's something within you that is wanting to step number two. That's why we have to sell it all. We die before we die. We let it go. It's a matter of letting go of whatever else is taking the space, whatever is filling any space that would keep us from claiming and owning our true birthright. In Unity, we have a powerful story to point to, an example, and that is the co-founder, Myrtle Fillmore. I'm sure most of you are very familiar with Charles and Myrtle Fillmore, the co-founders of the Unity movement. Back in the late 1800s, Myrtle Fillmore was very sick. The doctors had told her she just really had a few months, maybe weeks, to live. She had three boys. She didn't want to die. But Myrtle grew up in a family where a lot of the women in her family died early. Myrtle Fillmore had also been sick a lot of her life. Myrtle believed that she inherited a poor plight in life. Myrtle believed that she inherited a sickly body and some limited abilities. Myrtle Fillmore wrote in her Healing Letters, it's a book today, "I was once an emaciated little woman upon whom relatives and doctors had placed the stamp, TB, tuberculosis. And this was only one of the ailments. There were others considered beyond help, too. There were family problems, too. We were a sickly lot and came to a place where we were unable to provide for our children. In the midst of all this gloom, my husband and I kept looking for a way out. We felt sure we would be revealed and that God would call. And there it was." "We felt sure it would be revealed, and the light of God revealed to us. The first thought came to me first." So what happened was, there was someone, Dr. E.B. Weeks, was traveling through from Chicago, the Chicago School of Metaphysics. He was giving lectures. And everybody knew they were helping Charles and Myrtle take care of their children. This woman is sick, and they said, "There's this man from the Chicago School of Metaphysics, and they say he's speaking truth. You got to go listen to him." So they got themselves up, and they got ready, and they got there. And that night during that lecture, at one point in time, Dr. E.B. Weeks said, "You are a child of God, and you inherit the life of God. You do not inherit sickness." Now, Myrtle said it was every hair on her body stood up. Have you ever had those moments where the hair on your arm stands up and the shiver goes down your spine? Because she believed she had inherited sick life. So when he said, "You're a child of God, you don't inherit sickness. You're a child of God. You inherit the life of God." She said something within her said, yes, that treasure got brought to the surface. She wrote in her Healing Letters that she went home and she began to claim that. She wanted to believe it. She wanted to move into that level of knowingness. And she began to pray. She said she was guided to move her hands across her body and pray for the organs. Today we would probably call it something like energy work or Reiki work. Nobody told her, but she was guided to do that. It didn't happen overnight. But in the period of about 18 months, she was completely healed. She lived to go on to be in her late 80s before she made her transition. And she always said, "The greatest healing that I ever experienced wasn't physical healing. It was the healing of a false belief about who I thought I was." And so, my friends, the universe is asking me, it's asking you, who do you know yourself to be? Would you give me that song? Who do you know yourself to be? Who do you say you are? It's number one, that you're making that great discovery. And then number two is that there's a continual letting go. The scriptures say that we die daily. Well, we don't physically die daily, so what dies daily? Old beliefs. That was then, this is now. That's what I used to believe, but not now. That was then, this is now. Sort of a closing word to take with you is, there is something within me that is actively releasing my limitations and realizing my potential. I'm going to say it again and then ask you to repeat it. There is something within me that is actively releasing my limitations and realizing my potential. Let's say that together. There is something within me that is actively releasing my limitation and realizing my potential. Now I'm going to ask you for just a couple more minutes, and let's anchor this in just a moment of song and prayer. Would you give us that? I think all of you know this song by Karen Drucker that says, "Breathe." If you will just join me, and let's just sing this together for a moment and then anchor it in a prayer. And it goes like this. I breathe in, and I breathe out, and I take in, and I give out, and I let love, and I let go, release. And I know, man, you sound good. Sing it out. I breathe in, and I breathe out, and I take in, and I give out, and I let love, and I let go. I release. I invite you to close your eyes for just a moment. So as we join together, we realize there is one power, one presence, one life, one activity. Call it God, whatever we call it. It is so much more. So we remember that all that we are is an expression of all that is. And that every moment, every life, every day, we're being asked, who do you know yourself to be? And so we attune to that which is always awake and alive within us that says, I am that I am. I am that very presence. I am that life. I am that Holy Spirit. I am that I am. And whatever is being called forth, whatever is needed in this moment to face whatever is before me, oh, I am that. I am that. I am that I am. I am perfect peace that passes all understanding. I am love that knows no bounds. I am liberty, I am justice, I am love encumbered in so many ways as beauty, as life. And so I open to all that I am. And I do it in such a way that there is joy that overflows. There is a goodness that radiates. There is an aliveness that permeates. I am that. I am. Yes, there is something within me that is actively releasing my limitation and realizing my potential. And so it is. So I breathe in. Would you stand with me and sing it out? And I breathe out. And I take in. And I give out. And I let love. One person and say, I'm glad you're here, but this was for me. I'm glad you're here, but this was for me.